there's just, I think, a lot of anger as a consumer in the UK if, you know, you hear that your water company is about to fail and you're getting untreated sewer discharge in your neighborhood and your bills are probably going to go up and maybe the government has to bail out the largest water utility in the country. Something's clearly broken there.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is Future of Water, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 74, and I think it's going to be a good one. Today, I'm talking to Bluefield Research's Keith Hayes about the UK water sector and what in the hell is happening with Thames Water and the rest of the UK municipal water market. In recent weeks, it seems like the chickens have come home to roost for not only Thames Water, but several other municipal utilities in the market. The UK is somewhat unique in that it is fully privatized relative to the rest of the world. There are only a few others like it. So we thought we'd, I thought I would bring in Keith Hayes because he's done a lot of analysis on the UK market, municipal markets there, as well as around the world. Hopefully he can share some perspective on what this might mean, what's happening, and maybe what the possible outcomes are for the market. It is really unclear at this point, but a really interesting discussion, particularly for a utility that serves 15 million people and is on the brink of financial collapse. So with that being said, let's bring in Keith for a quick conversation. All right, so I'm joined here now with Keith Hayes. And Keith, how's it going?
It's going all right, Reese. We're still in the middle of a bad drought over here in Barcelona. So grappling with that, although we just put some research out, I think the Catalan government's, this is not their first rodeo dealing with water scarcity. So not going to be drinking seawater just yet.
Yeah, I think we were talking about it yesterday. So in Boston, we're all going to the Deer Island Wastewater Treatment Facility just for a company field trip. I guess that's what we do for fun around here. And I know you've gone to the desal plant in Barcelona in the past. I think you've gone several times with the office.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to do it again to see it's correct, because it looks like the utilization rates are through the roof.
Yeah, they had it running at usually like the last 5-7 years, it was like 20-25%. Now the thing is cranking. And I think they're churning out about 180,000 cubic meters per day, which for Southern Europe, that's pretty huge. And it's, you know, it's an insurance policy. I mean, we laugh, right? Usually by the time they cut the ribbon on a desal plant, it starts pouring and all of the scarcity is gone and there's no more drought. But this one, you know, they've kind of kept it humming over the years just in case. And we're thankful for that.
I think large-scale desal plants are like umbrellas, right? As soon as you carry the umbrella outside, it's not going to rain.
There you go. Murphy's Law.
So, well, that's not what we want to talk about today. There's a lot happening in the news, and admittedly, it feels like we might be sort of walking up or towing up to the third rail, and that is private versus public ownership in the UK. In relation to Thames Water. Don't really want to get into that argument. I think what we want to talk about is potential financial collapse of Thames Water, which is all over the news, particularly in the UK, if not the global news. It's raised alarm bells on many fronts. For those, you know, for the listeners, Thames Water is the largest water, wastewater utility in the UK. It serves approximately 15 million people across Greater London. So not a small system by any comparison. I mean, it's massive. It's old. Obviously, it's London. It's got a lot of infrastructure, aging infrastructure problems. Like I said, it's privately owned, but it's got $14 billion of debt on its shoulders right now. And it needs more. They need more money because they've got targets they need to meet. They've been penalized or fined by government regulators recently. So rather than dump all this on the listeners all at once, Keith, I'm hoping you might be able to share some background on kind of what's happening, what set this whole thing off, and then maybe we can walk through what it may or may not mean going forward.
Yeah. So Thames Water, as you said, largest UK water utility. And maybe not everybody knows that the UK is fully privatized water and wastewater sector. So late 80s in full Thatcherite form, they carved up the industry and created several large regional water services companies. And Thames Water, Severn Trent, United Utilities, Anglian Water, those are probably the four biggest ones. So it's fully privatized, except for, I think, Welsh Water, and maybe another small one. But pretty much 95, 97% of the population is getting their water and wastewater service from a private company. And that implies that then they had a regulator put in place, Ofwat is the name of the regulator, that is in charge of managing how these companies invest and try and keep costs low for the consumers. And it's a tricky role. A lot of countries, including like Chile, have followed the UK model in trying to privatize the sector. And I think, you know, what's come to a head over the last few weeks, and we said we weren't going to get too much into it, but, you know, it does the private, fully private model work. And UK is a bit of an outlier that most countries, most of their water and wastewater, you know, it's a natural monopoly. It is publicly owned. But what's come under scrutiny is having relatively low household bills. And at the same time, these companies taking on a lot of debt. And so, as you mentioned, Thames Water, 14 billion of debt now. They're about 80% leveraged. I think the idea was that most of these water services companies would be 60% or less in terms of their debt service coverage ratio. And that went off the rails a bit. And over the last few years, you've had interest rate increases, inflation, costs have gone up for pretty much everything you could imagine coming out of COVID, as we know. And so it wasn't a great time to take on tons of debt, not have a lot of leeway in terms of raising your rates. And then also, I think to boot, which has politicized this issue even more, is, you know, these companies paying out dividends to their shareholders. So, you know, the shareholders in Thames Water, they pumped £500 million of equity into the business in March. And they had also publicly trialed an additional billion of investment, or they said they were going to do another billion in investment, which hadn't happened. Last week, the CEO who joined 3 years ago resigned from Thames Water. And this is after they had recognized they were facing a lot of challenges financially. So that is obviously a symptom of a broader problem that Thames Water has had in terms of finding that balance between delivering service and managing the demands of shareholders. And on top of that, you know, just delivering on some of the operational targets that the regulator has set out for them has been difficult for them as well. I think just last week they were hit with another £3.3 million fine for untreated wastewater discharge. So there's a litany of issues here in terms of financial management, operational management. And I think the question is, you know, the deeper causes for this, and where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it does raise a number of questions. Like you said, it raises the public versus private ownership debate. It also, you know, for what it's worth, the UK, or, you know, has its own challenges right now. It's left the EU. So there's just a lot of financial stress on the UK as a whole. They've got a relatively new prime minister, Rishi Sunak, who's kind of under political pressure for a number of different reasons. Energy prices in Europe have been through the roof. Inflation overall has been high. And, you know, that's what happens when you lever your company during times of low interest rates and rates start soaring, which they have globally. It's not just the UK. Then everybody's starting to feel the pain. I think one of the other questions, or challenge. He says, you know, water rates also, which is not the prime necessarily the primary source of revenue for a utility, or at least for it's a source of revenue, obviously, but for capital investments and such. I mean, oftentimes there are municipal bonds if it's public. In this case, if it's private, they're borrowing money through private bonds and markets. So water rates, my point is, are really low in the UK. That's another challenge. So it's interesting to see what may happen with the utility in and of itself. So let's talk a little bit about Thames Water. I mean, ownership structure, who owns it? You know, who are the owners of the utility itself?
Right. So as I think, you know, over the last decade or so, it's, you know, water utilities tend to be a relatively stable, low risk investment. And so they attract, you know, large institutional investors, right? So you've got Ontario's pension fund, OMERS, is there as an investor. You've got the UK University Superannuation Scheme, or USS. China Investment Corp is in there. And that's Thames. And several of these other water utilities, these private utilities, have similar investor profiles. There are sovereign wealth funds, there are pension funds. And so, you know, it is politically charged, obviously. And when something like this happens, it's seen as kind of the bedrock of a country's infrastructure and considered to be super stable, right? So the idea that, you know, it's going to have to be potentially bailed out is concerning. And I think those types of investors are obviously expecting some kind of resolution to this, which is in line with, you know, their long-term investment horizon. But, you know, it does, I think, create a sense of greater risk in terms of financial management of these utilities than any of them had anticipated. So it's obviously something that both the regulator, the national government, and the companies themselves are going to have to try and sort out in a way that's going to restore confidence, not just in Thames Water, but in the system in general and the regulatory framework that they have in place.
With that being said, so while the government, Rishi Sunak led government, you've got Ofwat, the regulator, you've got the investors who they're trying to figure out whether they're going to put more money into it, discussing, you know, where do we find sources of capital to inject into the utility to keep this thing going? Does the government take it over or nationalize it? You know, it was, I think, the UK water market, you know, there's 17 water companies in the country, of which, you know, they're all, with, like you said, except one is private. That happened in 1989 at the tail end of Margaret Thatcher's regime. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but it seems like the bullets are flying, as we, I guess, sadly might say in the US. At whom are they being directed? Like who's under pressure, or who's sort of taking the hits these days?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the landscape of the finger pointing is multifaceted in terms of what set up the system years ago, which was, you know, the privatization push in the late 80s. I mean, so that had never happened. I think that's neither here nor there. I don't think we're here to debate that. I also think that, you know, you've got the investors themselves. So Macquarie, which is an Australian infrastructure bank that did own Thames Water previously, they reached over $10 billion in debt when the company was sold in 2017. And across the UK, those 17 water utilities that you mentioned, they've taken on over £60 billion of debt. And meanwhile, you know, while Macquarie was accumulating all this debt, they took out £3 billion in dividends over 11 years. I mean, I don't think I have the stats in front of me to say, you know, what was the right debt service coverage ratio? what was an acceptable amount of leverage, considering that everybody else was doing it, let's say, those other utilities, and the regulator was not stepping in. And I think that's where it comes in, you know, was it the role of the regulator to look at the financial health of these utilities? I think most folks would say yes to a point. It's hard, I think, with a private system like this to completely control all the financial engineering they do. You know, a lot of folks have cried foul about like executive compensation as well at these utilities. And there's just, I think, a lot of anger as a consumer in the UK if, you know, you hear that your water company is about to fail and you're getting untreated sewer discharge in your neighborhood and your bills are probably going to go up and maybe the government has to bail out the largest water utility in the country. Something's clearly broken there. And usually when something of that magnitude breaks, then the fingers start pointing towards the national government, right? And, you know, we're not fully in sort of a meltdown situation like, you know, the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, but it's of that ilk in terms of creating an environment for a strategic critical services sector where the financial management can get out of kilter and create a very tense situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge, the water sector, in another way to put it, is it's very capital intensive, but the revenue generation is very, I would say, measured is one way to put it, right? You know, so it is the imbalance is somewhat unique to other industries and other businesses. So that does make it difficult. As far as what I see and, you know, the people we've talked to, you know, obviously Margaret Thatcher is always the one who gets knocked around just for privatizing certain industries, such as the water utility sector. So that's never going to disappear. Macquarie, like you said, the Australian Infrastructure Bank, Ofwat is also getting beat up as well. I mean, they're the regulator who I think we've talked about it. I mean, they've been some, I don't know if the envy of the world is, you know, is maybe a little strong, but one thing that Ofwat does do is they have set up, you know, the asset management planning system, which happens every 5 years, which, you know, kind of sets forth the 5-year plan for all these water companies to invest. They've got targets to be met. But the question is, or at least, you know, how do they have teeth? Does a regulator have teeth to really control these gearing ratios, you know, for these private water companies, and should they have done anything about it? I mean, there's sort of discussions, well, we should have done something about it 10, 15 years ago. We saw this happening, but they didn't really do anything about it. I don't know if that's hearsay and how much power they really wield. At the same time, when things are going well, it's, you know, good times cover all the pains.
Yeah, no, I think you're making an important point though here, which is that some of the it feels like some of the facade of how well functioning the UK water sector has crumbled. And I mean that because for several years now, I think a lot of other countries and a lot of private players in other markets have looked at the UK and said, you know, we know what we really like about the UK. It's very transparent. You know, they've got this 5-year investment cycle. They're on their 8th investment asset management program. And we like that system. It's clear. There's consultation around it. Obviously, there's debate. There's lobbying. But this has a process that works. That's from a procedural point of view. Having a centralized regulator like Ofwat as well is considered good in that it brings some unity to the way that, you know, all these very local entrenched businesses operate, and therefore there are some standards there that are set and there are best practices that are shared. A lot of other countries would like to have an Ofwat. I mean, we live here in Spain, we don't have a centralized regulator. It's like river basin by river basin. It's a mess. It's a patchwork. It's really hard to compare anything. Doesn't feel like anyone shares any information or, you know, sort of policy approach. And so those things have been considered good about the UK, how they run it, who's running it structurally. And also, I think in the last several years, I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about digital water and innovation. And, you know, the UK has presented itself as a country that is fostering innovation in the water sector with, you know, having incentives built into their AMP cycle around investing in innovation and, you know, all the utilities going around the conferences, showcasing their R&D initiatives and partnering with startups and pilots and all that stuff. So everybody seems to think, okay, the UK have their act together. It's innovative. It's well-run. It's transparent. And it's like, okay, that's great. But behind the scenes, you've got Thames Water taking on massive amounts of debt. The CEO just quit. And everybody's pointing fingers saying this is horrible. So there's a facade that's been, I think, shattered at this point. And it's going to take some time to come back from that. You know, I mean, you think, okay, well, maybe if you'd spend a little bit less on innovation and more on paying attention to gearing ratios, this wouldn't have happened. Yeah. So I think that's some deeper soul searching that probably the sector's going to have to do.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. And not to circle back, I mean, we talked to, you know, and Thames Water is not unique. I mean, in the sense, it's got 14 billion pounds of debt. United Utilities has 7.5 to 8 billion in debt. Anglian has approximately 7 billion in debt. Severn Trent has 6 to 7 billion in debt. So, you know, the debt has been piling up, but, you know, I don't know if, well, to this point, everybody, and this is what we're doing, we're talking about the problem. We're not talking about solutions, right? The solution is not nationalizing it necessarily, because still you got to run a water system. You still have to invest in the infrastructure. You still have to deal with the stormwater or sewer overflows. You got to deal with leakage rates. I guess the long-term solution is somewhere else, right? Instead of just pointing the fingers, it's really a matter of, okay, how does either Ofwat get control of this? They're obviously not enforcing the 60% gearing targets, whereas, you know, the private investors, you know, they're also scattered all over the world, the investors of these utilities. So to the extent it's like herding cats, I can't say that, but they all have different agendas, different needs. And I know that, was it USS, the university superannuation scheme, they've already said, hey, we'll put more money in. They're supporting Thames Water at this point, but it's not just Thames Water. So, like I said, is it just giving Ofwat more power and control over what's happening? But they are fining these. It's not like they're not fining the utilities for their stormwater or sewer overflows, I said again, and missing their leakage targets, and they are penalizing these firms. Maybe they're just not fining them enough.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think there's plenty of that. I think in general, though, there was just the calibration in terms of how focused Ofwat was on certain operational aspects versus financial aspects. I mean, there was a big push. So this AMP cycle, the way that they run it and the level of investment, there's been a lot of debate over several years about, okay, it's creating very cyclical investment. It's not even, it's not good for the industry because you get this kind of like boom and bust in terms of investment. And that doesn't foster, let's say, maybe more financially responsible management. There's also the issues around the way that, you know, these utilities rely on their engineering alliances and they're squeezing them dry for lowering their costs, but at the same time, they're paying out their dividends. And also the move from just looking at CapEx to looking at this idea of total expenditure. So both the operational expenditure and the capital expenditure that these utilities are making. So the whole idea of like the financials around ensuring the investments has been debated, but not necessarily the back end of that, which is, you know, internally, how are they making decisions to pay out dividends and all. And I think that is where a lot of that anger is coming from right now. And that's kind of a challenge to deal with. And, you know, I also think, you know, at some point, what is challenging about the water sector, like if you look at energy, right? Energy sector, there's a shortage, the pricing is a lot more dynamic. And it's not a natural monopoly. You have independent power producers. And so it's an industry that is more capable of adjusting to shifts in its cost base and competition. And that means that the regulator has to stay engaged, but there are market forces in place in terms of who you can sell, where you can sell, that make it more dynamic, that allow market forces to break certain behavior or foster other behavior. That doesn't happen in the water sector, right? And you know, you and I both worked in energy before. In the water sector, it's totally different. It's a natural monopoly. So the onus is very much on the regulator to make sure that things are calibrated, because you can't just shift it from one month to the next because the cost of chlorine went through the roof, or you can't find, you know, the cheap labor because your country left an economic area with an agreement when they left the EU. So, you know, there have been shocks that the water sector is just not prepared to respond to quickly at all, just because of the nature of it is. And then you have that compounded with the way that things have been set up in the UK, compounded with, you know, maybe the regulator as well wasn't set up for it in terms of being able to act more dynamically when things are shifting. So, you know, it is, I think, as you've said before, it is sort of turning a battleship sometimes when things aren't going well at one of these huge water utilities or in the sector in general. It takes time to work through it. And if you don't get it right, it's going to take a while before things are going to get adjusted and get closer to right.
Yeah. So let's talk about like what's next. So I think you mentioned it. Thames needs, they've just received, I think, £500 million. They still need to close on another billion, whether it be from current owners or other sources, but they're sort of working on that. The government, whether it be, it sounds like Rishi Sunak, someone's got to make a decision whether the government's going to step in. What else is on the agenda? Anything to look for timeline wise?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got the asset management planning cycle that's beginning. So right now there's consultation going into these next 5 years, 2025 to 2030, where they're going to have to do another price review and then set, you know, required levels of investment there's a negotiation in terms of the business plans that are presented versus, you know, what the government's asking them for. So that's, I guess, the big thing is that all this is happening while, you know, entering into another cycle. And I think, you know, is there going to be some consideration about the way that these asset management plans are set, considering the financial health of these utilities, which seems to me is definitely going to have to happen.
And it'll also be interesting to see what happens with those engineering firms, you know, the program managers. You know, they bid on these plans and these projects, right? They step in these agreements. It'll be interesting to see how the competitive landscape changes, if at all. Are there going to be some firms that say, you know, we're out? We've already seen some companies that have sort of stepped away from the UK market. Black & Veatch was several years ago, but that is one example of a firm that said, you know, we're out on the UK. There are other opportunities for whatever reason, not just the shortcomings of the UK private water sector, but and management structure, but other things as well. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I mean, let's wrap this up. And any other takeaways or final points you'd like to throw in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm hoping that some good can come out of this in terms of just understanding, like, we can't just trash the entire UK water sector because this is happening with Thames Water. And even though I think a lot of the headlines we're going to see in the press are going to call into question all of that, you know, the transparency and innovation and the centralized planning aspect of it, I think that needs to be highlighted in terms of trying to make that work, but also have, you know, fiscal responsibility as well. So I'm expecting, you know, there needs to be sort of a balanced way of considering this. Seems to be definitely that the UK government is somehow going to have to, you know, cajole investors to put more money in, obviously try and keep it off the public books as much as possible. No one wants, you know, a bailout of a large, swollen, private water utility. And then I think there's going to be some leaning or some sort of auditing of the regulator in terms of what they didn't do. And I think they're going to have to do that, whether they like to or not, to try and restore confidence in the sector in general.
Yeah, I mean, my final takeaway is it's not Twitter. It's, you can't just let it collapse, right? You know, it's a water utility. So with that being said, it's a critical service that we can't live without. Yet everybody's sort of, you know, pointing fingers, and I guess maybe the freak out is warranted, but it's also something that we don't have a choice. So we have to deal with it, or at least the UK does. I mean, the US and Spain, every country, every city has its own water problems. I mean, I would say, you know, back to the where we started, the public versus private, you know, everybody's complaining about these private companies taking on debt and paying dividends. Bad messaging, right? Bad tone, everything of it does not look good. At the same time, if it's a public utility, it's not as if they're in debt. They're also able to kind of hide behind, in many cases, city budgets. They can do different things that you may not see all the numbers.
Getting close to the third rail there, Reese.
Exactly. And I'm not picking sides here. What I'm saying is it does depend, right? There are private operators who run really well. There are others that do not run so well. I mean, back to the U.S., market. I mean, they're 20-25,000, or you know, 15% of the market is privately run. Of that, you know, half of that is run by investor and utilities. The rest are these private, smaller community systems, and those are the targets for roll-ups. These are much bigger systems in the UK, and you know, it's sort of feels like a lose-lose situation, no matter what.
Yeah, I think there are trade-offs, and I definitely agree. There's not one size fits all in terms of which model is going to work in which markets. I think there are things that, you know, as in any sector, private investment can bring in terms of innovation or best practices from somewhere else. And at the same time, you know, that needs to be done responsibly. That, you know, that's kind of the one of the tricky, interesting, but very challenging things about, you know, municipal water supply is it is finding that balance of how do you get things to get better, but at the same time responsibly. And it is so essential, as you said, you can't mess with it easily. It does change very incrementally over time. And you know, I think we looked a lot at private investment, for instance, in emerging markets, and private sector tends to be pretty good at building out new infrastructure more quickly than let's say the public utility that may not be operating so well. But that's a very different situation from what we're looking at here. And, you know, I think you're right. You can't just trash private or praise public in a blanket statement. It is sensitive to the country and the context. And you know, I think because they have championed this, you know, idea of transparency and innovation in the UK, I think a lot of folks have rooted for this model to work. But, you know, there's been chatter of nationalizing the water utilities for years. And how much of that is based on just, I would say, you know, political, theological grounds, or how much is that actually based on operating results? That really depends on who you ask.
Yeah. Well, let's put a pin in it and call it a day. I appreciate the time. I do recommend to anybody listening to this, you know, just go onto the web, go to Google and see what's happening. There's a lot of news. Financial Times and The Guardian have done some really good reporting on the situation, and it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. It does seem a little chaotic. I mean, like I said, there are 15 million people, you know, at stake, their water services, not that it's going to be cut off and shut down, because that's not possible, but it'll be interesting to see how the government manages, I guess, what we would call a crisis. So, all right, Keith, thanks a million, and we'll catch up soon.
Always a pleasure.
All right, take care. All right, thanks to Keith for jumping on and talking through a pretty complicated issue in the UK. So look forward, like I said, to see how that unfolds in the coming weeks and months. Once again, thanks to Mike Gaylor for producing this podcast. Couldn't do it without him. For those trying to do podcasts themselves, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. So thanks to Mike for that. And thanks to the Bluefield marketing team as well. Before we sign off, if you're in Boston, let us know. We can set up a meeting in our new location, 10 minutes from the airport, 10 minutes from the train. Really easy to swing by and say hello. Always happy to take you out for coffee or maybe even buy you lunch. Please subscribe to the Future Water podcast and give us a review. And send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you'd like us to discuss. We're doing this for you. And thanks to those who've already done so. We look forward to receiving more suggestions going forward. And lastly, tell a friend about it. As I always say, it's always good to reach out to a friend. No better excuse than to share a future water podcast. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.